Nothing about us without us.
Yours.
Turn up your radio. I got something to say. Turn up your radio. Turn up your radio. I want a revolution. And I want it today. I want a revolution. I want a revolution. Turn up your radio. I got something to say. Turn up the radio. Turn up the radio. I want a revolution.
And welcome to 3CR. You're listening on 8:55 a.m. here on International Day of People with Disability. Hi, I'm Helen William. And for the next hour, we're going to be talking a bit about the rollout of the NDIS, and particularly as it's happening in City of Yarra in 3CR's own neighbourhood. I've got a few guests with me here in the studio, and we'll have a few more on the phone. So let's start with some introductions. I've got Karen Stevens here, who is a mother of a 22-year-old son, Brinley?
Yes.
Brinley, who has a package, and we'll be talking about her and his experience of getting through to the NDIS package. We have David Brandt here, a long-time connection with 3CR, who was a programmer some years ago with Rocking the Boat and is the convener of the Australian Network for Universal Housing Design and many other things besides that I'm sure we'll hear about. So both Karen and David are very active in the City of Yarra around NDIS and disability advocacy. And in the studio we've also got Kevin Stone from Valid, also a long-time connection with 3CR. Valid is advocacy group for people with intellectual disability and their families, based in Fitzroy, and very much focused on self-advocacy. So, hello everyone, happy International Day.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. Thank you.
If I can start with Karen, you can tell us a little bit about your experience of getting to the NDIS. What were your hopes for it when it first started? How did you get involved with it?
I suppose I'd heard a lot. There'd been a lot of media coverage on it, and I guess the unknown was quite scary. At the time, because we'd only had one rollout and I didn't know anyone in Geelong, I'd spoken to a few people in Melbourne, but there was a lot of unknown. And then, when it finally came and someone said to me, well, you need to do a plan, I thought, well, what sort of a plan? So I sat down and thought of everything that my son would need. So, it was scary, but I'm over that now and through the plan.
Mm. Yeah. And David, what's been your experience with the NDIS? How are you engaged with it?
Well, I have a plan, which I was very lucky to get in a sense, because once you're over 65 years of age, you can't access the NDIS. And living in Yarra, one of the five councils from the northern region that are trialling this, I managed to enrol, sort of, on day one. It was a messy process at the beginning because everyone was new and the people at the local area coordination office were learning as they moved. But I successfully completed the enrolment process and then was fast-tracked to obtain a package. Mine is very small. There is not a great deal that I require from the NDIS at the moment. But I'm vision impaired to everyone who's listening, and I could lose the remaining few percentage of sight that I have in the one eye that works a bit tomorrow, and then I'll need a lot more help. So I was getting in while I still could. I sneaked in with a week.
Mm. So we're talking about this as, well, we know what the NDIS is. Maybe I'll come to you, Kevin. How would you explain to somebody who's still a bit unsure what this beast is? What is the NDIS? What's it supposed to do?
What it is and what it's supposed to do are sort of probably two different things. What it's supposed to do is provide a system of universal entitlement to Australians with disability to support services. And for anyone who knows the disability sector, that are aware what a big deal this is, because most people, like me and perhaps like David, have been campaigning for many, many years, decades, to try and achieve a system in Australia where people with disability didn't have to, and their families, didn't have to beg and scrape just to get a basic service. You know, we had our system at the moment across the country still places people in just incredibly undignified and desperate situations where, you know, often people can only get a shower or support for a shower once a week, can't get their wheelchair replaced, can't get access to support services to help them get a job. So we're in Australia, we've been used to a system where, you know, really it was just rationed. So the NDIS is supposed to be the solution to that problem, and it's a result of a lot of campaigning over decades by the disability community to try and achieve justice, social justice. And it is a major commitment at a national level. You know, all parties support it, political parties, and the NDIS is it's still in its infancy. It's been rolled out across Geelong over the last 3 years. In Victoria, it's now being rolled out across northeast Melbourne area and across those five local council areas that David referred to. And over the next 2 to 3 years, it will become a completely comprehensive system across Australia. It's going to take the spend, the budget for disability services from somewhere around $9 billion to around $20, $22 billion. And it will, if all goes well, it will provide people with a disability, social justice and access to support that's probably unprecedented across the Western world, really.
So we've come somewhere.
We really have.
But we need to keep on it. That's what we're saying, isn't it? This is not necessarily all going the right way all of the time.
Well, I guess that's why I drew the distinction between what it's supposed to be and what it is. What it's supposed to be is that that ideal support system for people, and that's certainly, you know, the intention of everyone involved to try and get there. But of course the reality is that, you know, you're starting from a very low base in many cases where there aren't support services available. I've just come back from, you know, rural Victoria where there, you know, it's very difficult to get access to services. You go to remote parts of Australia, even harder. And so we're starting from a low base in terms of the availability of services, but also the expectations of people with disability and their families have also been, you know, conditioned to be quite low. So the NDIS is it's a revolution in the sense that for the first time, packages of money are being allocated to people with disability and to their families if they're required to support them in that. And they are the customers or the consumers in this so-called sort of disability marketplace.
It's a weird idea, isn't it, a marketplace for disability, don't you think?
I have difficulties with it, but I also can see the great power that it brings to people in terms of control and choice.
I think choice is a really important idea, but it also seems to me that we're moving away from what was an important idea of genuine welfare and society that was built to be, you know, as fair as possible for everybody, to something that is, as you say, it's very consumer based, and you're out there and you're battling a bit for it.
And I think that's probably again why I draw that distinction between what it's supposed to be and where we're at. I think the original design of the NDIS was based on this idea that the marketplace would get us there. Well, the marketplace gets us a little bit along the path, and there's still an awful lot that needs to be done in community that can't be achieved through individual packages of money. And the NDIS, actually, the design now recognises that with what they call Tier 2 or Information Linkages and Capacity, which is about building up community engagement, changing community attitudes, getting organisations working together. That's not the marketplace. That's tapping into that community goodwill that's absolutely essential.
Thanks, Kevin. I might come. So, David, you wanted to jump in?
I don't actually object to the marketplace. I don't think that the product that we're being offered currently by the traditional service providers has changed very much in 20, 30 years, sometimes even longer from some of the older agencies. And there's still a charity model there a little if you enter into the fray. I think that the marketplace will have some things to offer it, and that many people in the traditional community sector, CEOs of large service provision organisations and the like, need to lift their game. I've inquired of people in these five suburbs as to exactly what new offerings any of the traditional service providers are offering. You know, are they working out that over the years people have asked them for adventure holidays and rafting expeditions? And if they have, are they working at providing that sort of thing for people with physical and mental disabilities? No, they're not. They're just doing the same thing that they've done for a very, very long period of time. If the marketplace can offer, can shake that up and offer some things like that, then that's a good thing. Do I want it to be entirely an open marketplace? No, but there's a lot of complacency out there. I can't find anybody who's offering a new program. Kevin?
Can I totally agree with you there. I think that the marketplace potentially has a lot to offer, but it really does. It's not only about the services having to be more creative and more flexible. It's also about people with disability and families becoming more demanding and raising their expectations of themselves, of their sons and daughters, and putting that pressure on services. And one of the most fundamental pressures is the need for people to see themselves as individuals with unique needs, and for mums and dads to you know, see them in that way too. And the biggest revolution that needs to occur is the breaking down of congregate-type care. People, rather than having, my son Damien, who has Down syndrome, he's been a participant with NDIS for the last few years down in Geelong. And even though he's always enjoyed pretty good services, or very good services, he was always required to do things in groups.
Yes.
Because that's the way things were funded.
Because mysteriously everybody wants to do exactly the same thing, right, on a Wednesday afternoon.
The NDIS has meant that Damien has been able to choose the things that he wants to do with his time in the evening, on the weekends. He's able to, you know, he's got his own life.
Karen,
not hanging around pool halls like his father.
Hey, excuse me.
I'm sure with great success.
Yeah.
I might bring that back to you, Karen, just to reflect on your experience as a parent, yourself and Brinley. The kind of before experience, which take, I'm sure, a lot of energy to glue together the services, and how that's different now with NDIS and where you would like to go with this.
Yes, I definitely agree with David that the marketplace excites me, believe it or not, to be able to have choices and to ask for things that, well, in the past we've always had things on offer, and if we didn't like them or didn't fit into them, that was the end of it. I feel like there's now a sense of control with my son, who had a large input into the plan, and I feel that he will be able to say what he wants, and that's what the marketplace does. And I've already contacted some service providers, and they've given me their outline of new things for the NDIS, as David just said, and it's just sensational. It's a great feeling to have that sort of control, whereas in the past there was no control like that. It was given to you, and if you fitted the bill, well and good. Yeah.
So could you give us some examples of the kind of things that are different for Brinley and yourself with NDIS, or will be different? What comes out of having this greater control and choice?
Well, I think the fact that we know where our funding is going. In the past, you were just given something, and the monetary-wise, you couldn't even decide whether you wanted a little bit of that and a little bit of this, or you could split it, or just that you can make decisions on that. And if you choose one way, well, then you might have to forego something else. But at least if that's what you want, you're in control. Yeah, choices. I'm all about choices, yes.
So what did Brinley put in his plan?
Basically that he wants to live independently.
Yeah.
So as an independent
22.
Person. Yes, exactly. Anything but living with mum, I think. Yeah, that was the bottom line. And, of course, there's many steps at 22. There's many steps that he has to make to achieve that. And they've put that in, and, yeah, they've broken it down. My planner broke it down. And, yeah, it's good.
So for the listener and me, flesh that out a bit. What have they given him in terms of assistance? Is it just dollars for accommodation, or is it more? Or?
No, there is no accommodation dollars at the moment, but things like an outreach program for some cooking and learning cooking skills, some speech, because he left school 4 years ago, and now the speech seems to have... I haven't had any speech since he left school, so there's therapy money set aside. Still more public transport training. Anything that will lead to independence and, of course, money and learning about money and that sort of thing. Because he doesn't take a lot of notice of his mother, which is not unusual for a 22-year-old. So I do need support to achieve some of those things.
So, David, perhaps we could ask you what's going to be different for you with the NDIS package compared to what you had access to previously around the city of Yarra and Melbourne.
I too didn't know what to ask for in a plan. I struggled to come up with anything much because I was looking at the worst case scenario into my future. In the end, I've received a couple of pieces of package worth $2,500 or something in total. Some is for IT training. I'm an Apple Mac user, and I want some expert training in how to make better use of iPads and the like. And I'll come back to the failure of my ability to get that in a moment. Some other minor benefits, one of which is moving my mobility allowance from Centrelink to the NDIS. There are some tricks that one needs to learn in all of this. I speak well, I'm articulate, and I have a good understanding of bureaucracy. And as Kevin says, he and I have been in this game for an awful long while. So when it comes to self-advocacy, I'm not particularly good, but I know how it works. I think what's happening to an awful lot of people is that they're not good self-advocates and they need training in that, and they're making mistakes. My mobility allowance actually rose under the NDIS system because the person from the local area coordination committee in Brunswick Street, who has been very helpful, maybe give a list of all the committees I serve on, which was embarrassingly long, and they said, well, you need to jump to, I think, the third tier, the top tier, in terms of a mobility allowance, which is some money to cover you for maintenance of a car if your family's using one to carry you around, or for transport and the like. But I'm hearing on the grapevine that many people are actually losing their disability allowance in that process, and perhaps Kevin can talk about that a bit more. But before we go on, when I tried to gain IT services through the traditional provider for people with vision impairments and blindness, Vision Australia, I was unsuccessful because they don't have anybody who is currently trained to provide me with IT assistance other than from the traditional JAWS system, which isn't what I require. So there you have a provider that I first asked for services in that area 15 years ago, still not able to provide them for me, even though I'm offering to pay.
And that brings me to build on that, Kevin. There's an enormous capacity required here to make this work, capacity from us as disability community and our families and friends and supporters to be able to engage with this system and become people involved in this marketplace. But then there's the capacity of the system itself. You're relying on local area coordinators and government systems and benefits to all talk to each other in a way they've never really done before. That's clearly not going to happen overnight.
No, and it hasn't been happening overnight. The NDIS inherits a lot of the problems that, have been the bane of our existence for many years. And one of those problems is territoriality. One of the reasons we all supported the NDIS was to try and overcome the buck passing that traditionally went on between Commonwealth and state governments, and indeed local governments. So the idea was, let's, have one level of administration, but in many ways, we've still got those problems. We've still got, territoriality between state, federal, national office of NDI, all those sorts of issues. So getting people to talk to each other, but from my perspective, from Valid's perspective, getting people in positions of power to listen to the voice of people with disability and their families and getting to actually respond to the issues, that's our main role. First of all, as an advocacy organisation, our job is to be alert to the problems, the issues, and to try and project that to the decision makers, the policy makers, to get attention. So David's just mentioned, for instance, the issue of mobility allowance. To give you a quick example. When my son first had his allowance, transport allowance in his first plan, it was around $12,000. He lost his mobility allowance. That's a separate payment that he was traditionally entitled to. The second year, his plan went down to, in that area, around $6,000. Then the year after, they put a cap of $2,300 across the board.
And now, had he become a transport superhero in the meantime?
His needs hadn't actually changed there.
Oh.
Now, I put that on the list of lots of systemic issues that are arising that we're constantly having to, have them address. There are lots of those issues, and that's understandable. This is early days. The other most important part of what we do is to actually support people with disability and their families to speak up and to be confident to speak up, to understand their rights in the process. And David's absolutely right about the need for people to learn how to actually self-advocate. So Valid runs, right across Melbourne, but at the moment particularly focused on northeast Melbourne area, self-advocacy training programs, courses for families to know how to become demanding consumers. We really need to support people to go from being hapless recipients of charity or welfare to people who are actually, alert to their rights, demanding quality, so that they can put that pressure on the system.
You're listening to 3CR, 8:55 AM, and streaming live on 3cr.org.au. We're talking to Kevin Stone from Valid, David Brandt and Karen Stevens, all involved as advocates and self-advocates in the disability advocacy space. We're just going to have a bit of a music track, and then we'll come back now with a good segue to a self-advocate, Simone Stevens from Valid, who's also been involved in the NDIS trial site down in Geelong.
On the wall in the office of Reinforce is a handheld story that tells the course of the long, hard struggle for those of us with ID to find a voice and be heard for what we need.
Like transport, health, education and play. Like living in houses like everyone else every day. And the simple freedom that most others enjoy that were consumed by the shackles institutions employ. It was the spring of 1982. The winds of change came sweeping through. We took on the government who had houses to spare that held them for staff from any damn where. There was this one old place in Drummond Street that was sitting there empty in no one's keep. They said it was one more place for ministry staff. But what about us, we said? Why do we come last? So we moved right in and started to squat. And the government said, hey, get out, you lot. But we sat right there for all to see. And the ministry's power was in jeopardy. We came and we stayed and we wouldn't let go. Spoke to the world, let everyone know. Discrimination, human rights, equality is everyone's fight. Tired of promises and government words, tired of waiting for our voice to be heard. So we started talking with our own two feet, and we moved in to 112 Drummond Street. 112 Drummond Street. 112 Drummond Street. Many days went by.
Welcome back. You're listening to 3CR on 8:55 AM on International Day of People with Disability. And we're talking about the rollout of the NDIS and how it's working for people in the city of Yarra. But we've also got now on the line with us Simone Stevens, who is a self-advocate and NDIS champion from who works also with Valid. Hi, Simone.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. And yourself? How's Geelong?
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah,
it's actually quite sunny.
Yay! So we've been talking about people who are getting into the NDIS now in the city of Yarra, but you've been involved in this for much longer in city of Geelong because Barwon area was one of the trial sites. Can you tell us a little bit about how was that experience for you? How did the trial work?
Well, it was a bit daunting at first because you didn't know what was going to happen, and there wasn't much information about it, but it was also exciting.
So what excited you about it the most? What did you enjoy about going through a process? I mean, it's a bureaucratic thing. You're obviously a bit of a pioneer for us. What was the best things about it?
I guess it was just the thing of being a part of something new, something to be a part of, revelating people with disabilities and making up new opportunities.
So what has changed for you since the trial and now the rollout? Have you, what's different in your life now that you have a plan, and has being in the trial helped you to tweak things that make it better for other people?
Well, I've got, certainly got more hours,
yeah.
More support hours to do things. And I've also been able to get a new wheelchair and go to medical appointments and, have taxi funding to do things that I need to do in the community.
So these are fairly fundamental things, just to live a basic, decent quality of life. What else are your ambitions for the future now that you've got some more hours and you're able to get these supports that you want?
Continuing to do what I love the most, which is continuing my job that I come up to Melbourne for. Just the basic fundamental things that everyone else does on a day-to-day basis. And that's what I want to do with my life. And I don't think I could, I know I couldn't do that without the NDIS.
So what would you recommend, what tips would you give to people who are starting what you started a few years ago now? How should they approach their first plan and their engagement in getting involved with the NDIS? What are the things that they should know?
Before planning goes ahead, you really, really need to sit down and think about what you want to do with your life and think about in the future when you are unable to do things for yourself. So I know it sounds pretty terrible, but you need to think of the bad situation too. So when you, if you do become to that point, you've always got that support, and then you're not having to go back to the NDIA and say, look, this has changed, because the NDIA knows that that's in your plan, and that is going to be making it easier for you to obtain that.
So think big, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, think massive.
Think massive. I'm going to get that on a T-shirt. That's a brilliant slogan. Think massive. All right, thank you very much, Simone. I'm going to take that as your message to everybody on International Day of People with Disability.
Yeah,
think massive.
Think massive.
Thank you so much, Simone. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. That was Simone Stevens advocating Think Massive. I know you have to head off in a little while, Kevin, so perhaps if I can just come back to you. I mean, I think that's a really good idea. What is that going to mean for us in the future? How do we keep the NDIS going the way that, if I come back to you, what do you think we should have to keep on with the system? How do we keep it the way we want it, or make it the way we want it?
Well, if you really want to know what I think.
Yes, I do.
I've been thinking deeply about this lately. I was in America a few weeks ago. I actually touched down on Orlando Airport an hour before Donald Trump did. I don't know what that means, other than I got a glimpse of, amongst people there, of a really dark side to what society can become. Society can become a very small-minded, discriminatory, racist, bigoted, fearful community. It can become that, led by the wrong people. Australia's not like that. But it certainly has voices that are becoming louder, that are getting more credibility politically. It frightens me to think of that influence, that sort of right-wing influence coming in to our politics more. The NDIS depends on having bipartisan support at the highest levels right through this community. It depends on having people out there on the street understanding it, supporting it. But there are people out there on the streets who don't support the idea of compassion. They don't support the idea of actually spending their taxes on anybody else other than themselves. You asked me, you know, what I think the NDIS is going to need. I think we've got to recognise, first of all, that the NDIS is a representation of the very, very best that Australia is. You know, we're an egalitarian, fair society, and the NDIS is the best expression, you know, since Medicare, of what we are as a society. We have to defend that. We have to fight for it because there are threats, you know, at every level there are threats to it. We cannot take it for granted. It depends on the budget promises being kept, on people not having to beg and scrape, being pushed to the end of the queue again. That's what the NDIS is supposed to be. You know, we cannot take it for granted.
When the NDIS campaign was building up, the Every Australian Counts, there was a huge amount of advocacy, particularly to the political classes, around the real stories of the terrible conditions people were living in. And I think that was very powerful. But do you think we also have to start telling these stories in a different way to the rest of the community? Do people really understand how most people with disability live in this country?
No, they don't. And I think that I think the Every Australia Counts campaign has done a wonderful job, an amazing job of putting pressure on at the different levels. I think that we do need to move into a different phase now, and that's making sure that community, society, really understands the benefits to hear the stories that we've heard this morning about, you know, we hear problems. I mean, I'm the one who will tell you about the problems with NDIS, because there are, you know, lots. However, we've got to remind ourselves of the overwhelming, you know, advantages and benefits, and we need to keep telling the community about it. The Australian newspaper just continues to focus on the negative, continues to try and rip it down. They need to start telling, all media need to start, you know, to tell the stories of the incredible changes and benefits it's bringing to people's lives.
Yeah, and that we need to remember that the five councils that we're talking about is trial mark two. NDIS is trying to work out what's going to happen when they have to roll it out to everybody in a few years' time. So they're learning, I hope, an awful lot from this broader trial run out than Barwon itself, and I think they are. Some very positive things are starting to happen. The NDIS has allocated a lot of money to provide accessible housing for those people most in need, so the 5% of Australians most immobilised by their disability, physically immobilised by their disability. Families will be in a position to build houses, receive government grants for those houses and house their children, and that will provide housing for about 30,000 people in two-bedroom units. We're not talking about large group accommodations here. We're talking small units where people will be encouraged to stay as long as they possibly can within that. So there are really interesting and good things starting to happen, so let's not be too negative. Exactly. But if you're one of those people who are about to embark on this and are feeling scared as a family member, start finding some allies and alliances. Every council in Victoria has a metro or a rural access worker. I'm told that not everybody's working on this, but within Yarra, the metro access worker has been incredibly supportive of me and has information that I hadn't thought of about nuances in what you ask for in plans and things. And Kevin's organisation, Valid, are doing the same thing for their clientele. So look for help, people that will help.
What would you recommend, Karen, about people who are starting out on this journey? Where do they look for help and advice? What have you done?
Yes, there's been a lot around. I've attended two or three forums run by councils and Valid as well. The website's fabulous. The NDIS website will keep you up to date with any changes that they make, and they do make them a lot. There seems to be a number of changes going on. I suppose the newspapers, but you do have to sort through it. You have to be, sorting out what's the negative and what's the positive. And also even social media has a lot of negative on it as well, which I got a little bit upset by at one stage. But I've learnt to just sift out what I want to hear and work with that. My committees, my current providers have been very, very good with their new packages and new things that they've got on offer and their pricing as well, which we need because we're in the marketplace. We do need to see those prices presented. And I think if a provider hasn't got that up and running, you would have to question where they're going, because they're very aware that the NDIS is up and running. So
you're going to have some power to where
exactly.
you spend the money. All right, we'll be back in a moment with another guest. And thanks very much to Kevin Stone, who's joined us for the first half hour. And we'll be back in with more discussion of the NDIS in a little moment.
Turn up your radio. I got something to say. Turn up the radio. Turn up the radio. I want a revolution. And I want it today.
Welcome back. You're listening to 3CR on 8:55 AM, and it's International Day of People with Disability. We have special programming all day, 12 hours today, focusing on disability issues. We've got all sorts of discussions around NDIS. We've had poetry. We've got music most of the afternoon. So please stay with us all day. Now we've got next in our discussion of disability, the discussion of the rollout of the NDIS, particularly in South Yarra, but also in the north of Melbourne. The next guest to join us is Simon Chong. Good afternoon, Simon.
Good afternoon, Helen. Thanks for inviting me on.
No problem. So you're just a little bit outside of the city of Yarra. You're up in Heidelberg, aren't you?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I'm in Heidelberg, so that's the next local government area from Yarra. And, it's been an interesting process. While I was thought I knew a lot about the NDIS from an outsider's point of view, it was very different once I got the unexpected phone call saying that I was going to be enrolled.
So you got the call saying you're a winner, and what happened after that?
What happened after that was, I got a phone call out of the blue saying, we noticed that you've been using state services, we believe that you'd be eligible for the NDIS, and then they said someone from Brotherhood of St. Lawrence, who are doing the work for the NDIS, would contact you soon to set up a plan. And that consequently did happen, yeah.
So for you, did you have any idea of what developing your plan would mean, and how did you go about it after that?
No, I didn't really know what it would mean. I mean, I knew about it in theory because I work in the community area and so on. So one of the interesting things, and I've been listening to the show, one of the interesting things that I had to do as a self-reliant, very independent person, I have a vision impairment, like the previous guest, and in the old language it would be called legally blind. And my main area of need is, obviously, I'm quite socially isolated. I don't have the ability to drive a car, and my main disability is to do with reading and writing and seeing things in a normal fashion. So my main area was the area of technology that I needed some assistance with, because that's quite expensive and prohibitive. So I had to change my mindset in some ways to some familiar things that I had to do. I had to change my mindset from being independent to needy, but this great government system will change my life kind of thing, and point out how they could help me kind of thing. So that was interesting, and so I had to really think about what I really needed. I hadn't had to think about that for a very long time.
That's really interesting. So basically you've kind of just fairly well, this is as good as it's going to get, and all of a sudden someone turns up and says, what do you need? It's a pretty big turnaround, isn't it?
It is. And I remember having to do something similar for a government department, 30 years ago or something, and you had to get what you needed, you had to talk like a needy person,
yes,
but also a grateful person. And one of the side effects of the NDIS, as I'm noticing it being part of it now, is that they've gone back to that bureaucratic way of thinking. And, like, for instance, part of my plan is technology, as I said, and within that, my planet says the NDIA will pay the service provider directly for my technology. Now, there's two problems there. One is they're using old language. It's not a service provider. It's a supplier. I don't need a service.
Yeah.
I just need someone to provide
IT.
The technology. So
yeah.
So it's a retail store, in a sense. So they're using old language. And now they've changed the rules midstream and said that I need an occupational therapist, to which I'll have to pay for through my plan, to prove that the item that I want and need, which most vision-impaired people use, is necessary and reasonable.
So we're back to a situation where you don't know best at all. And
correct.
Yeah. So, David, yeah, so I can see you huffing and puffing over here. So I think David wants to jump in on that one.
My experience is fairly similar, Simon. I, too, am legally blind. It's a bit complex. I couldn't find anybody immediately, and still haven't been able to, who can provide the specific IT services I require. My IT services are currently supplied to me free of charge by my geek son. And I approached the local area committee and said, if I can't eventually find somebody to do this, can I get my son to do it? And they said I could get my son to do it, but I would need a letter from a similar provider that you mentioned. But that doesn't worry me too much, because it would be a one-off visit to that person and they'd give me the letter and then I could employ the expert that I know well to do it. So it's a bit bureaucratic.
David, what annoyed me was, and I'm fully, and I'm an Apple user as well, and that's a whole nother story, but I was asking for something that was agreed upon and it was proven to be an okay thing, and it's not controversial in any way.
Yeah.
And now I have to get an occupational therapist to say, oh, yes, that's a necessary piece of equipment. So it's going back to the old days where individuals don't count and only one authority figure needs to hear it from another authority figure that's proved, you know?
Yeah.
So, Simon, if we bring back to the kind of the global, what do you want the NDIS, how do you want it to actually be, rather than potentially falling back into those kind of, as you say, authoritarian approach?
I would like them to be able to act upon some of their catchphrases by giving us power and control and individual abilities. If I can put a reasonable case for a support or a technology or some kind of thing that I require that is reasonable and necessary, to use their language, then I should be able to obtain that within, if it's not too outrageous, if it's not controversial, and if it's within certain budget restraints, sure. And, like, for instance, I'm originally from Western Australia, and they have a scheme over there that the Lotteries Commission, which is funded through people's gambling on lotteries and tax lotto and so on, that they will provide equipment up to a certain amount of dollars. It's means tested, but it's not. There's no questions about it. If you're eligible, you'll get it. And if you're not, you won't. But it's open to everybody, and there's negotiations, you know, around it. Here in Victoria, there is no such similar thing. So now the what I am pleased about, now the NDIS providing such a service, so that I will give them that. So I yet haven't had any services provided to me as yet, even though I've been on the scheme for nearly 2 months. It's taken a very long time to get everything active. Okay. And to engage. So I guess, like Kevin was saying earlier, we do have to give them a bit of latitude, because whilst they are calling it a rollout, it is a trial, and they are changing things as we go, and that's a bit frustrating.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us today, Simon. Have you got any message for people on International Day of People with Disability?
It's just stay strong, keep safe, and stay proud and keep loud of what you're doing, and be proud of who you are, with or without a disability.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us today, Simon.
Thanks, Alan. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Right. Cheers.
Cheers. Karen, maybe I'll come back to you. So we're beginning to feel that people are, you know, getting into the planning. There's a bit of bureaucracy. Maybe it's not immediately, you know, nirvana. So what are your suggestions for people about getting ready for this and going through it, because the expectations are really building up around this, aren't they?
Yes, I haven't myself experienced any negativity yet. I can feel something coming on. At the time of the plan, I asked for some speech therapy in the therapy section. I'm not sure what it's called. They all have their categories. And my son has since then been to a podiatrist, and he needs some assistance with podiatry, and I'm not sure whether it's going to fit into that category, which does concern me a little bit as far as my, you know, my negativity. I've only had the plan for about I've only had the funding for about 5 weeks, so I'm not really sure how that's going to play out. I'm relatively new. Can't sort of comment on that, so I am concerned about those things, that they fit into categories. And if you didn't speak about it at the time of the plan, I wasn't aware that the podiatry was necessary at that time. So I guess there can be problems. Sorry, what was your question again, Helen?
It was just really some hints, tips for people, but as you say, it's all very new to everybody.
Yes. The newness. I have been very aware that it is just a trial again.
Yeah.
And if we have a problem, we need to go to the authorities that will listen to us. I feel the NDIS is very open. I spoke to somebody at a forum yesterday, and they were very, very interested in hearing any feedback that we had. You know, so I think we've just got to keep feeding back, and things might change. Yep.
David, you mentioned earlier that you might lose some funding, and other people, I think Simone particularly, was talking about having to think about everything you might need. Karen just talked about podiatry. Even if things aren't in the plan or people's assessment of your needs change, it's going to get pretty exhausting, isn't it? I mean, people have had a long time of working with bureaucracy. This needs to be an easier kind of bureaucracy, doesn't it, if it's going to work?
Yes. How it was explained to me was that your initial plan would be valid for 12 months and you can reassess it at the end of a year, and they will reassess it at your request, I imagine. So if you first registered for the plan 2 months ago, you might not be able to access the podiatry for another 10 months when you readjust your plan. That seems a long way away for podiatry, so there needs to be some variations within that. So perhaps that's something that they'll need to address. They're trying to do an awful lot.
Yes.
With not very many staff in a short period of time.
Yeah.
And they're trying to progress some of that stuff. We have to give them some latitude this year. I mean, other people that I've noticed that are suffering from this are small service providers. So if you're a physiotherapist running a small business out of a converted house with two or three employees, some of those people are going bust because it's taking so long for them to get their payments made on it. So there are other people that are suffering under the system because they're presumably not registered with the NDIS in the same way that they were with DHHS earlier. And I was in a meeting early this week with Alistair McEwen, who's the new disability commissioner,
Human Rights Commissioner.
Yeah. And he was saying that what he was hearing was that there was a great deal of variation in not so much about how things were rolling out from the NDIS itself, but from the way service providers were approaching the notion of there needing to be some change.
Thanks, David. You're listening to 3CR on 8:55 AM. We'll be back in a moment with our last phone guest for today, Frank Hall Bentick.
They call me Spurs, they call me Crip, they call me Mom, they call me Special, that's not my name.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, celebrating International Day of People with a Disability.
They call me Rita, but I'm a riot. Joey Deacon, always the same. That's not my name.
Disability Day on 3CR, 12 hours of community radio by, for and about people with disability.
Able-bodied Australia does not realise that people with disabilities across the board are being discriminated against. Then the government to demand that we go out and get a job without removing the disincentives like the lack of access to transport and community infrastructure, without providing accessible buildings that can provide barrier-free employment. I'm not getting a fair go and I don't like it and I'm saying so.
You're listening to 3CR, 8:55 on the AM dial.
You're listening to 3CR, 8:55 AM, and we've now got with us our last phone guest just before we wrap up the show at 1 o'clock. And joining us now is Frank Hall-Bentick. Hi, Frank.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Well, thank you. We've got Karen Stevens and David Brandt, who are both involved with NDIS personally, but also been long-standing disability advocates here in the city of Yarra. You're obviously a long-standing advocate across the board in disability area. You've got a huge CV. What do you think? Are we going in the right direction with the NDIS? What's your perspective on where it's headed?
Before I do that, can I say hello to Karen and David and to all our comrades out there in Radio Land?
Hi, Frank.
The concept of the NDIS is revolutionary, particularly here in Australia. But the problem we're going to have is keeping governments committed to it. And we can already see that in Western Australia, the Commonwealth Government have given the Western Australian State Government the nod, the authorisation to continue their state-based services. They say it's on the basis of a national approach, but you know, that may end up with Western Australia never coming into the full NDIS. You know, I listened to the show earlier and we hear talk about marketplace. You know, I really worry about marketplace approaches where, you know, dog eat dog, you know, the best business is the most productive business who's after your job, after your dollar. The problem with that is that people with disabilities have traditionally been so disempowered that you know, we are part of the marketplace. We need things that are over and above what the marketplace can cheaply provide. So we need service providers who are really attuned to what we need and listen to us about what we need. We need bureaucracy, like the NDIA, that listens to us about what we want and need. The problem for most of us is we're not used to things other than just scraps from it, off the table. People who have services have been on very limited services for many, many years, and they're not used to being asked, well, okay, you know, but other than getting you up and feeding you, putting you to bed, what else would you like to do with your life?
Yeah.
And that's really disconcerting to a lot of people. You know, now they're being asked. But in a lot of cases, bureaucracy and, you know, the NDIA are trying to limit that because they're trying to limit the dollars. They're trying to limit the overall effect on the government purse, but also, you know, their own need for further staff to facilitate that. My personal experience here in Yarra was that leading up to the NDIA coming in here on the 1st of July, I went to a number of meetings at Yarra, public meetings with the NDIA, Human Services, and they told me that I would have choice and control, and I would develop a budget and a plan, and I would have an independent organisation come out to talk to me about all that. What I found on the 1st of July was that the NDIA had decided, for their own financial reasons, that there were a number of people about it. 30%, I think, here in our region, that they will be doing the plan for. So the next thing I know, I get a what was going to be a half an hour interview to talk to me about what my goals were, what my plans were, you know, what my services were, all about my disability, and a half hour interview. Eventually turned into about a two-hour interview with me, you know, arguing quite strenuously about what I needed.
So if I can just, conscious we're getting close to the end of the show, Frank. If, I think David's got a question or a comment he wanted to bring in there.
Well, not for the people that you've spoken to today who are all strong self-advocates, but we need more trained advocates that can work to help those people who have never advocated for themselves and can't determine their own plans. And one positive note to end on is that Minister Foley, RMIT and VCOS have come together to set up a Futures Institute for training people. And the very first thing that they're looking at from the beginning of next year, because the Institute was only established a month ago, is the issues to do with the NDIS. I'm hoping that one of the first things that happens out of that is that we will be training advocates, because a year ago people were saying no advocates would be needed and disability advocacy would disappear because the NDIS would be so good. A positive is that people in positions of power and influence are starting to move on this, and we haven't had any training that gave, almost any training that's been available for people who work as advocates within the advocacy sector. I'm not talking about PhDs here, although that Futures Institute will deal with that sort of stuff. I'm talking about certificates 3 and 4.
Karen, if I can just quickly come to you before we end, what's your last thoughts on where we're at with the NDIS and on this journey?
Well, I think we do have to remain strong, even as a mother and an advocate for my son. It does become weary, you know, you become very tired. But I see that if we remain strong and, I guess, know what you want and ask for it, Don't be afraid to be heard, and I suppose shoot for the stars, and if you miss, you're still in orbit.
Great. And Frank, I'll give you the last word. You're a long-time advocate. What would you suggest people do as they're embarking on their own NDIS journey?
To only work through independent organisations and advocacy organisations.
Yeah.
The budgets from bureaucracy will always be limited, so we need independent people to be working and helping us develop those plans.
Thank you very much for your time, Frank. Sorry I had to cut it a bit short. We had a lot to talk about today, and I'm sure you'll be on and we'll have a further conversation with the community as the NDIS rollout continues. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
And thank you for having us on.
You're welcome. Thanks to all of our guests today. Thank you to Karen Stevens, mother of Brinley, who has been involved with him in his journey to get an NDIS package. David Brandt, long-time 3CR person, programmer on Rock the Boat, but also convener of the Australian Network for Universal Housing Design and long-time advocate, all sorts of other committees, as he said. We had Simone Stevens from Valid, also Kevin Stone from Valid, and you can find more information about them at valid.org.au. Simon Chong we spoke to up in Heidelberg, and also last Frank Hall-Bentick. Thanks to everybody. Thanks for staying with us today. We've got all-day broadcast of 3CR, International Day of People with Disability, special programming. You won't hear Steam Radio or Swing Us Away or Jazz on a Saturday today, but do stay listening with us for more disability radio.
Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia, on the Kulin Nation. For more information and to find out how you can support 3CR, go to www.3cr.org.au.